Save big on everything when you shop at Menards. Give your walls the most advanced protection with Pittsburgh's Paramount Interior Paint and Primer in one. It's scuff, scrub, and wear resistant, while also blocking stains and delivering true one coat coverage. Choose from thousands of color options and refresh your space for spring. View our entire selection of paint and accessories today on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer to find great deals happening this week. Save big money
at Menards. Nobody does it better than Regent Seven Seas Cruises. Enjoy all-inclusive, unrivaled luxury with unlimited shore excursions, indulgent cuisine, personalized service, and more aboard spacious all-suite ships. Visit rssc.com to experience the unrivaled.
I think Pete Hegseth is playing to an audience of one, which is the president. And I think he does do a very effective job at messaging to the president.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Trailblazers. This is Jamal Simmons. I have with me really one of my very favorite people. Sabrina Singh is joining me. We worked together at the White House for a little bit, but then she went on to bigger and more important things at the Department of Defense, where you probably saw her, where she was one of the big chief spokespeople over at Department of Defense in the Biden administration. And now you'll see her on TV at CNN talking about global affairs. I want to welcome Sabrina to Trailblaze. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's nice to be on with you. I know we worked together in the White House, and it was a really fun time, and it's just nice to connect now after a while.
Absolutely. Listen, so I have to ask you a question because we are at the anniversary of January 6th, and you were in the transition and getting ready to go into the White House during that time period. I just want to ask you what you think about this fifth year anniversary of such a tragic and momentous day.
I think you sort of encapsulated it perfectly. It was such a tragic day. And I certainly remember where I was. And at the time, I was working for Vice President-elect Kamala Harris. And I was supposed to meet her later that day. And as you'll remember, she was at the DNC. Other staff that were part of the transition team were there with her. And of course, when there was that call that, you have to evacuate the building, of course, she left. And I remember, being part of the transition, one of the hardest parts was the Trump team would not allow us to transition because they did not want the election results certified. And it's such a tragedy. And looking back, I mean, I really can't believe it's been 5 years.
Wow, I know, right?
Right. Time has flown by, and it's also like, it's sad. And, I think this administration has done an incredible job of just like, sort of spinning the events of what happened that day into something that it wasn't. I mean, it was an insurrection. So I think we have to remember that, but also take, lessons learned and move forward. And, we have been and heal as a country.
Absolutely. Okay. So in terms of healing as a country and moving forward, while we may be healing, I think there are people in Venezuela right now who are trying to understand what really just happened. And I think there are a lot of people here in the United States trying to understand what really happened too. Like I said, you were at the Department of Defense and you have been really steeped in America's national security and foreign policy for the last few years. Can you tell me your take on the Maduro capture and what it really means?
Well, on the military operation itself, it was nothing short of remarkable or extraordinary by our men and women in uniform. I mean, an operation like that, we heard General Kane, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, sort of lay that out at that Trump press conference over the weekend. What he laid out with 150 aircraft used, our special forces team on the ground, Delta Force, which, is a unit designed to limit collateral damage and being able to extract Maduro and his wife and have no American casualties. I mean, that is nothing short of significant. And I think certainly our military for their efforts, there really isn't another military in the world that could do an operation like that. So that does deserve, I think, some applause. I think now it's like the aftermath of that, which I think is what really your question is getting at, is what happens now?
Yeah.
And we've learned from, Libya, Iraq, Afghanistan, regime change does not always yield the effects that you think it is. And you'll remember, you know, I remember watching statues of Omar Gaddafi being toppled and Saddam Hussein being toppled and cheering. But there's a power vacuum that will be filled. And, you know, Donald Trump says that the United States is running Venezuela effectively. What does that mean? Because if we are running Venezuela, then the question is, are we overseeing their courts? Are we going to be establishing an election process for the country? Are we going to be a local law enforcement on the ground as well as the military presence to secure some of the oil fields that Donald Trump wants to extract oil from? And I think Venezuela and the people there also have a say in the determinations of their country's future. So I think there's a lot of unanswered questions for everyone. Of course, I think most importantly, what does this mean for American interests? And I don't know that we know the answers for all of that yet.
Yeah. So, you know, there are reports now that the president talked to American oil companies before he talked to Congress, frankly, about what's going on. And I have been hearing for weeks beforehand that oil companies weren't really that interested in going to Venezuela. It's an expensive place to get in. You think about this from a project finance standpoint. You got to earn out what, you know, the investment is going to take to get oil out of the ground, secure the facilities in Venezuela. It could be decades before you could get that money back. I'm not sure a lot of companies were really that interested. But what do you take on this idea that the government, the president was talking to companies before he was talking to Congress?
Are we exposed? This is what every security team is wondering. But with vulnerabilities scattered across network, cloud, AI, and OT silos, the truth is out of reach, and attackers know it. There's a better way. Unify to defy risk with Tenable AI-powered exposure management. Tenable brings together all your security data and exposures in one unified view, giving you the attacker's map and revealing the critical paths and weaknesses they can exploit. Now your teams can prioritize intelligently, move decisively, and collaborate without friction. Tenable turns scattered work into a single proactive force. Instead of chasing noise, your team knows where to focus, gaining clarity, control, and speed to reduce cyber risk with confidence. Learn more at Tenable.com. Tenable, your exposure ends here.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two-fourths of the British podcast No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.
I mean, I certainly know that if it had been our administration, I think there would be hearings already, calls for impeachment. You know, that's completely unacceptable. I mean, that's not how the government should operate. You know, there is the reason for the Gang of Eight that exists in Congress to be briefed on issues like this of absolute national security or any operation that could put our men and women in uniforms' lives at risk. And so I just found it fascinating when Marco Rubio was standing up there and saying, you know, this is not really the type of operation you'd brief Congress on. And I was like, okay, excuse me, good sir, you were a member of the Gang of Eight. If you were still a senator, I think you'd be up in arms if this happened under the Biden administration and we didn't brief you on an operation. And so, you know, that was like shocking to me. And J.D. Vance, too. I mean, member of the Senate, you know, worked with, you know, certainly his Republican colleagues for a while. I mean, it's such malpractice for this administration to not at least brief that small group of members just on before or like or right as the operation is about to happen, because they do have a right to know. And part of their role in Congress is to represent the people. Yeah. And, you know, we can have conversations after about an operation, about the legality, if we agree or disagree. But, you know, that's what the Gang of Eight is for. And what I also found pretty interesting, Jamal, is that, you know, the secretary, Rubio, Secretary Hegseth, the president, they're like, well, this is a law enforcement, you know, action. But then you didn't even brief the relevant committees there. So, like, which is it?
Well, you know what's funny is we talked about them running the country. When Donald Trump on the first day gave that press conference and said, we're going to be running the country, people have not really talked about the look on Marco Rubio's face at that moment. He shot his eyes over at Hegseth and the people on the other side of the stage with a stare that I know very vividly from being a staffer when your principal said something
right.
that is not in the briefing book and you're trying to figure out, wait, what?
And I think he also tried to, you know, Rubio did that dance on the Sunday shows of trying to like pull it back.
He ain't for it.
And then Trump just went back out in Air Force One and was like, nope, we're running it. And so I'm sure many people are confused by what that means, because the reality is, you know, we're not in an Iraq situation right now, which is a good thing. But we don't have anyone on the ground, and we haven't had an embassy presence since 2019. So where would we even run the country out of?
Exactly. So one thing about your old stomping grounds over at DOD, Pete Hegseth is being quoted by The Atlantic as talking about the president's foreign policy being fuck around and find out. Right. I mean, we have heard this from various people, this FAFO kind of philosophy. Is that real? Because I think Vladimir Putin is fucking around, and I think he has not found out yet in Ukraine how America is going to respond. Is this FAFO a real strategy or just talking points?
Is it a real strategy? I mean, I'd hope that's not. You know, like a policy being implemented by DOD that's just, you know, four letters.
A doctrine.
A doctrine, right. You know, I think when it comes to Pete Hegseth, I mean, he's someone that I think just likes to use sort of buzzy words, you know, and the reality is that the job is such an incredibly serious job. I mean, you look at his predecessors that had the job before him. I mean, my boss, Secretary Austin, was a former four-star general who commanded U.S. Central Command. You know, I think Pete Hegseth is playing to an audience of one, which is the president. And I think he does do a very effective job at messaging to the president. So these sort of buzzy words and kind of leaning into this, you know, like, of course, leaning into America first all the time and like pleasing Donald Trump and the MAGA crowd, you know, is really politicizing our military. And at the end of the day, we'll have such and is going to have such long-term effects down the road that it's going to be very hard, I think, for anyone who assumes that position next to kind of get back to an apolitical structure. So, you know, it's concerning for sure.
All right. So let me ask you one more question before we go. I'm not even going to ask you about whether or not, well, I should ask you, do you call it the Department of War, or are you still calling it?
I do not, because it is the Secretary, Department of Defense, congressionally mandated. And until that changes, it is the Department of Defense.
All right. So let me ask you this. How is this going to be taken around the world? I mean, we hear the president now rattling the saber at Greenland. People, you know, Denmark is a NATO country. I don't know if we're planning on doing some sort of military action against NATO, which seems to be against an alliance. The general terms of an alliance seem to dictate you don't attack each other. But how people are interpreting around the world, America maybe being the unstable actor, at least in the Western Hemisphere, that America maybe is an unstable actor they have to hedge against?
Well, you know, there are a few things there. I think our partners and allies around the world for a long time, I mean, since this administration came into office, have questioned if the United States will be there for their alliances. I mean, just going back to what happened with Ukraine and sort of that dust up in the Oval Office to, you know, the Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, even cutting off military intelligence and sharing capabilities with the Ukrainians. I mean, that rattles NATO allies and our partners all around the world, because we should stand for freedom and democracy and the international rules-based order, which is something that, you know, Russia obviously violated in 2022 with the invasion. So looking at it today and with Venezuela, I mean, it's not like this administration is really hiding the ball on anything either. They were pretty clear. I mean, if you look at what Project 2025 was all about, I mean, they did want to carve up these spheres of influence and go back to this sort of looking inward, more isolationist position. But that's also pulling from a doctrine from, you know, decades ago.
1823. And the Monroe Doctrine, right, was 1823. Like, and
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So the idea that, you know, the international rules-based order changed after World War II.
After World War II, right.
So, like, I think it's, you know, this administration is trying to focus on this hemisphere and basically stay out of our backyard. But we have adversaries all around the world, including China, who's watching what the administration is doing. And I think it's twofold. I think, one, Russia, China, Iran, you know, North Korea, the military operation in Venezuela, the military operation with Operation Midnight Hammer in Iran. I mean, that shows our military capability, that we do have the best military in the world. But if you're also those countries, you're looking at sort of, you know, what the United States is doing, and we are taking our eye off the ball of China. So China's going to, you know, use this as an opportunity potentially to continue to expand its power, both economically and militarily. You know, Russia could use any justification at this point. I mean, you know, Maduro was not a democratically elected leader, but Zelensky was.
Yeah.
But if Russia wanted to use some of the talking points coming out of the Maduro operation, I mean, they can. So, you know, I think it kind of sends chills to our allies and partners around the world of, is the United States going to stand next to me if something happens? And the last and final point that I'll make is, you know, the idea that we're going to seize Greenland. I mean, we are talking about a potential, like, conflict with a NATO ally.
Yeah.
I have no idea why we would do that. That would break one of the greatest defense alliances in history. So, you know, it's a lot of rhetoric that should be taken seriously. And it's also, I think, deeply concerning.
So my theory about Greenland is that what Trump really wants is he wants more access to the minerals. I think he
Absolutely.
Probably wants more access to listening posts in Greenland for what may come across the Arctic Circle in terms of China, Russia, or any other adversaries who may be coming through. But that he's not happy with the terms of the deal. And so while Denmark may in fact be willing to help America out on some of these questions, he wants to soften them up before he sits down at the table. So he's got this hammer hanging over their head when he asks them for whatever he wants. I think it's negotiating. Well, let me just say this. I hope it's negotiating, because the idea of attacking a NATO ally seems like destabilizing in a way that we will spend decades trying to recover from.
I totally agree. I hope this is, you know, he does consider himself a great negotiator. I hope this is all just posturing, because I think there can be a deal that can be made here. But what does that deal look like? But like the idea that we're going to attack a NATO ally, I mean, I have no idea how that's America first, in America's best interest. Oh, and oh, by the way, you're going to expend resources off the coast of Venezuela. You're going to potentially go into Cuba, Colombia, take over Greenland. I mean, you tell me how that's lowering grocery prices here at home, helping, you know, people meet their healthcare premiums, lowering prices at, you know, you name it. I don't think that's America first.
So this is really the last question.
No, it's okay. I got
you. You've been a DOD. I think a lot of people ask me this question, and people wonder how the rank and file military is interpreting what they're seeing out of this administration. One from a Hegseth, who called all these generals and admirals from around the world to lecture them about their slovenliness, to you know, the retraction of any of the DEI and diversity initiatives that, you know, 40% or something of the military are people of color in some fashion. You know, how is it that you think people are interpreting this, and are they really, from the rank and file to the flag officers and the generals and admirals, how are they thinking about this from your perspective of having worked with these people every day?
Hello, America. It's your new favourite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two forts of the British podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.
You know, from the folks that I know well.
We didn't even talk about sending them into American cities.
The
National Guard
deployed
to patrol.
Of course.
Yes.
You know, I think this is a really hard moment for anyone in uniform right now, or even our civilian workforce that's at the department. I think, you know, over time, administrations have politicized the military in ways. But this is to such an extreme. And the idea, I mean, I think everyone laughed like privately behind Hegseth's back about the idea that you're going to lecture a bunch of, you know, 4-star general and flag officers, all, you know, or I mean, just that entire group of people who have put their life on the line, who understand, how to meet standards. And then also, you know, Hegseth going after, you know, we've seen like a purge of women, very competent, you know, women be purged from the ranks. It's going to have such an impact on the military going forward. And I don't think he cares. I think he has an idea of what the, you know, in his mind, here's what a soldier should look like. And the reality is that, we need to keep bringing in people from all different backgrounds, from all across the country who reflect our country, because actually it's that type of diversity of just people that makes our military stronger. So, you know, I think people internally are really concerned on the long-term impacts.
Okay. I think that you're probably right. From what I know of dealing with folks in the military, they are incredibly diligent, incredibly loyal. They come from a variety of backgrounds. They are like the rest of us in a lot of ways, but with exceptional amount of, you know, obviously service. And what they're being asked, what's being asked of them at this moment is very contrary to why a lot of people joined up in the first place. So
absolutely. And like you sign up because you're putting your life on the line to defend the Constitution, to defend American interests. And this is, you know, this is a real test for our military and actually for the American people right now. It's a real test.
Yeah. All right, Sabrina, thank you for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two forts of the British podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.